Hey everyone, welcome to Family Business Today, where we feature prominent local and national family business owners. We also talk to top family business experts to discuss relevant topics, including communications, business culture, family relationships, succession and estate planning, values, as well as conflict resolution. Brought to you by the Tennessee Center for Family Business, I'm your host, Greg Lewis. Our guest today is Charlie Lockweiss. Charlie Lockweiss is the founder of Experts in How and a 30-year business veteran with a strong track record of success at some of America's best-known companies. His experience as a CEO and serving on the board of a prominent family-owned business inspired him to create Experts in How to help family businesses establish the high level of governance, leadership development, and generational engagement that can preserve their wealth and ensure their success for generations. He is the author of several books, including The Power of Legacy and Family Business, and host of the internationally recognized podcast, The Power of Respect podcast. Charlie is a sought-after speaker and has spoken to groups across America and around the world. He specializes in topics related to family-owned businesses. Well, good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
I am so glad that you could join me this morning for this edition of Family Business Today. I've really been looking forward to our interview to learn more about your family business experience and your new book on creating a lasting family legacy.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's just jump right in. Let's get started. Before we get into your practical knowledge about family businesses, you have a new book out called The Power of Legacy. What is the difference between a family legacy and a family business legacy? I know people ask me that all the time.
Well, first of all, as you know, legacy can be difficult to define.
Sure.
You know, there's a host of psychological elements that result in what a legacy is and what it means. My pay grade, I get to the practical side of things.
Right.
Family legacy and business legacy should be directly related. I define the legacy as making decisions now that will affect future generations that follow. So legacy has to be about what you do, who you are, what you believe in. And that means legacy should start with people, in the case of family business, at the family and their stated purpose. Why are they in business? The business then, on the other hand, should reflect the purpose and values of the family that have been governed in a manner that's true to those values and purposes that the family is pursuing to achieve their legacy. And as you can tell, the evolution of either the family or the business can certainly change that trajectory at any moment. So that has to be taken into consideration as well. But really, the whole part about understanding who you are and why you're in business is a key start, the key element that starts with the founders and is something you want to see carried on through the business, through the family, and then into the governance structure of how the business decisions are made.
That's such a great point. You know, when we're talking with family business leaders about transitioning or whatever, it's usually not too hard from the founder, first generation, to the second generation, but a lot of times third, fourth, even fifth generations, they're never going to have known personally the founder and to really know why they started that business, those questions that you just brought up. But why is it important for family business to understand their family business legacy, though?
Well, for me, it starts with understanding who the family is and what their perspective is on what I consider to be three very important elements for family business. And I talked about purpose already. So purpose is, why are we in business?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one for me is direction. What steps should we take and what are the risks we're willing to take? And the third one for me is actually legacy. Legacy to me is, to what degree does the business provide for future generations? So within that construct, it's important for the family to be the source of it in ensuring the business decisions are aligned with what the family has set forth on these three elements I mentioned, and that successive generations need to be prepared to understand and embrace their stewardship responsibilities going forward. So it's important for one to know the other, but it does come back to starting with understanding who the family is and what their perspective is on purpose, direction, and legacy. And then once that's understood and in place, that becomes the guiding light for which aligning the path forward and making sure that successive generations, because you made a point earlier, sometimes the successive generations, if you get out there too far, don't really know what those might be, never actually met the founder. But the fact that these are in writing and carried forward allows them to understand and embrace their stewardship responsibilities. It's interesting example of where the family legacy and the family business legacy were different and weren't understood until near the end. There's a story about Alfred Noble, and I'm not sure if you know this one. Alfred Noble invented dynamite in the 1800s, and of course, made a fortune being the only one who invented it, and for many years being the only one who sold it. His brother died in France sometime later, and the French newspaper mistakenly thought that Alfred Noble had died. And so in the obituary, it said, the merchant of death has died. When Alfred saw that as his stated legacy, he was appalled. He couldn't believe it. He wasn't thinking about it in those terms at all. And so he sold all his holdings and took his wealth to repurpose it for something that would benefit society going forward. And that's the birth of the Nobel Prize.
How about that? That is amazing. Yeah. I've heard that before, but yeah, what you think your legacy is and what it is should be the same, but it's really about what does the next generation define it as. Well, going a little bit further with that and talking about your legacy, I remember interviewing a farm, which is a family business, and it was a fourth generation. And I just asked, I said, have you identified who the next generation, the fifth generation, is going to be? And he said, yes, he's right here beside me. He's my nephew. And I said, well, how old is your nephew? He said, he's 7 years old. So what I'm wondering is, when we talk about legacy, When should we begin to talk about family legacy with both the family and also in the business?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I think it goes back to your example. And I'll add on with another example. Sure. Client of mine, someone 100 years old in Chicago, run by three brothers and an uncle. And one of the first things I do with families is ask them to tell me who the family is. And most of the time, people start by saying talk about the people who are directly involved in the business, whether they're actually officers in the business or perhaps on a board of directors if they have a board. And so this issue of when do you start is very apparently missing in many organizations, because my next question to them is, well, are there any uncles? Are there aunts? Are there any grandchildren, et cetera? And they begin to understand that the extended family is the consideration for this and the consideration for generational engagement. You mentioned a seven-year-old boy in your example, and there can be many of them. I have worked with families who are in the fourth generation with 45 people, and another one who's in the sixth generation with 150 people. And so the concept of generational engagement is an ongoing process. And if it hasn't started, it's never too late. For me, it's to help educate all the family members, as I mentioned, the extended family as well, as to who each other are, you know, what the business is, what it does, how does it serve the family, its associates, its customers and communities it operates in. And it's important for them to begin to understand that at whatever age possible. And I'll get into more detail on that in a second. But in addition, the process can allow the family members to have a voice about their perspective on the family and the business. And sometimes that's missing, and that causes problems as you get down the road. It should allow for open discussion about the values that drive the decision-making. We talked about that earlier. Was the purpose and values of the business, and how should they be used as a key to family governance? And all this takes repetitive discussions and interaction over time. It's an ongoing process. And again, as I said, it should start, in my opinion, as soon as possible. Example would be family gatherings is a great first step, and that can begin with children who are very young, including the seven-year-old example you gave. These family gatherings are not a presentation on the company. They're not sitting down with 7 and 8 year olds and saying, here's our products, here's how they work. It's merely a family picnic or a family reunion of some sort, where people first get the chance to run around with each other and begin to understand, as I mentioned, who they are and what they're all about, each as a family member. And so it's an introduction of cousins, aunts, uncles, et cetera, potentially each time you have a chance to get together. And as family members become adults, a more formal program about the business can be offered, And that's where you include a lot of things in programs that say, here's what the company's about, here are the products. And again, getting back into the communities that they serve, you know, who their associates are, you know, potential facility tours from time to time, presentations of information about the business and how it's doing and that sort of thing as they become adults and beyond. If generational engagement is done well, it can definitely inform two other key elements to sustain your legacy, and that is leadership development and succession planning. Mm-hmm. So it's important to see how they're connected. And I know one of your questions coming up, we'll be able to shed some light on the connection of these elements of legacy. But generational engagement is one of the key six elements of legacy, in my opinion, that mm-hmm. I also described.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you. Well, talking about multiple generations and you know, as it gets old, more and more generations, there's more branches of the family tree, and there's more people involved in it. And you talked about communications. One of the things that I find is that there's this trust element. How can our listeners build trust across generations in their family business?
Yeah, no, that's important to understand, because conflict will naturally exist within a family business and within families, for that matter, as we all know, whether you're in a business or not in a business yet as a family. Mm-hmm. And to deal with it takes leadership. And so for me, that starts with respect. In order to approach difficult conversations, there needs to be some form of open communication that fosters relationships. And mm-hmm. even if you disagree with somebody, that understanding of how to respect them as you begin to listen to what they're saying is very important. It's you know, for me, and I'm an analytical person, you may be able to tell that from this conversation, but mm-hmm. If somebody starts talking to me about something, sometimes in my mind, I'm like, I'm down the road. I'm out there. I know where they're going. I know what the answer is going to be. And they're looking at me like, dude, you're not listening to me. And I think I am. And I think I'm showing respect, but you're not in that regard. And so sometimes you don't end up listening to the point where you understand what they're really, really making as a point, so they can more effectively discuss the alternatives to the solution. At the end of my podcast that I have, the podcast titled The Power of Respect, I ended with saying, respect builds trust, trust builds relationships, and relationships are the key to leadership. Mm. And I learned this lesson, a long time ago. Again, for me, leadership is an equal emphasis on results and relationships. And the point there being, for results, being an analytical person, I can do that with my eyes closed. So I have to say to myself, how do I focus on the relationship side of working with people all the time? And years ago, a good friend of mine mentioned to me some things that really stuck with me, and I'll share them with you here for a second if I can. He could walk into a room of 30 people who he knew he vehemently disagreed with their opinion on, and he'd walk out an hour later and they'd all be asking, when's John coming back to talk to us? And it's the most amazing skill, and I've not seen it before or since knowing John. But I said to John one day, I said, you know, how do you do that? You're a smart guy, but I'm a smart guy. How come I can't do that? And he said, I'll give you two words, listen longer. First of all, it's two words, so I can remember it. Uh-huh. And second of all, when you listen longer, you may find that by the time they get to explaining what they're trying to explain to you, it may not be where you're going in your mind and thinking about it. And therefore, you have a better understanding of how to deal with whatever it is they're concerned with. And I marry that with another mantra that says that I developed over time. If you're right now, you'll be right later. So you can afford to wait to listen longer and get through the point of understanding. That doesn't mean you always agree. And that doesn't mean there's going to be consensus, but it does matter that people feel that they have a voice in the conversation and their feelings. And again, that gets back to generational engagement being required to cover the entire family and not just select few. But I think if you combine those things together, the listen longer concept, if you're right now, you'll be right later, and be the pause, you'll find that you can have difficult conversations that don't explode or escalate to the point of being ineffective.
Very good. Very good. Well, you sort of touched on it, and I don't even have to say is that in a family business and in any company is generally there's always going to be conflict of some sort. And sometimes it's healthy because you get to hear different people's opinions on issues. But for our listeners, what are some common points of conflict that most family businesses deal with regularly?
Yeah, as I think about that question, there's probably three major areas that I think about relative to where the conflicts occur. And I mentioned them earlier. Conflicts occur when there's differences of opinion on purpose, why are we in business? When there's a difference of opinion on direction, you know, what steps should we take? What risk are we willing to, and who should lead the business? And then when there's difference of opinion on legacy, you know, to what degree does the business provide for future generations? Clearly, there's some cases where people in a generation may say, I don't think we need to provide anything for the future. And those situations are ones where there's certainly going to be a lot of conflict as well. That cycle can be broken, but sometimes that does occur. And with each of those areas, opinions will differ. In many cases, some opinions are not even sought out. So a lack of communication and a lack of family and business structure designed to address these opinions will certainly lead to conflict. People feel their voice is not heard, or they will feel left out altogether. You can be guaranteed that could generally brew into something. I can think of businesses that I've been involved with, whether working in them as a non-family executive or whether working as a board member or an advisor. There are certain branches of the family when they're ignored and they have expectations about what the business means to them or how it's being run. They end up taking action in some cases, and in many cases, they may even take legal action in an effort to change the direction. And that comes out of the blue, and the business has no chance to plan for that per se. You know, and those things change, and people's conditions and circumstances of what phase they're in their business. And one business, one of the gentlemen who was getting older and didn't happen to have any children, and he was actually falling on ill health. He all of a sudden decided, hey, you know what? I want to be bought out. And the problem is that the cash required to do that would result in requirement to probably sell the business. So not knowing that about him, not understanding him, not having conversations along the way to understand where he's going and what his needs are, have resulted in a surprise, if you will, relative to how to deal with a need of one of the family members.
Very good, very good. Yes, so we see that all the time. Working with a couple of clients right now for that particular issue, and it's decisions have to make. So purpose, direction, and legacy. So most people would have thought that you said one of the most common points of conflict was money, and I suppose money is a part of all of those. Any other thoughts on that?
Well, as a matter of fact, money is sometimes the motivator behind the disagreement on any of those categories. Because you know, the purpose of the business, if I disagree with the purpose of the business that my family's in because I don't think they're building enough equity or generating enough profit or enough dividends for me, I could raise my hand saying the purpose is off with whereby my intention is really I want more money. Same with direction, and especially with respect to the element of direction that says, what are the risks we're willing to take, whether I agree with those or not, because I'm sitting there saying, well, you know, I don't want my inheritance blown on a bad decision or direction. Therefore, I'm going to raise an issue with that. And then clearly also within direction, who should lead the business? And again, that can be a matter of wealth or money or even prestige for that matter, because in addition to money, the next biggest thing involved here is the emotional elements of any one of these. And how people feel about themselves and how they're treated and what it means for them to say, I'm in the family that owns business X. So it's going to be important. And it's same with the legacy, because again, you know, what decisions should be made for future generations? If I think money's not being paid out in dividends per se to me, because we're investing in the business to grow it for future generations, again, I may take exception with that and create an issue of conflict.
So what I hear you saying is that many times members of the family business, all they want to be is heard. How are some ways that you can give voice to all members of the family?
Well, basically, you know, establishing a culture of respect, I mentioned earlier, and utilize the process of generational engagement where family members foster relationships among themselves and are encouraged to speak up about their perspective. So creating those environments, it's not, you know, the more the people know each other and have a relationship, the easier it is for them to talk to one another and establish these differences in perspectives or their desires of where it's going. Because it's really an element of advance notice that really makes a difference. There's a number of structures that can be used to facilitate discussion on key matters. One, for example, is a family council, which establishes a structure of information processing and decision making from the family's point of view. So it's just the family in there, and they ought to be able to be in that meeting and discuss what they're thinking freely. They're not in front of management for the business. They're not in front of a board of directors, et cetera, or some outside entity, a bank or what have you. Another example is that I use this frequently as well, is the use of surveys on a periodic basis to surface issues the family members might have, and helping people understand that everyone has a right to ask a question. Everyone has a right to get an answer. They may not always like the answer, but if they understand that they've been able to ask it and they can understand the answer in the context it's given, it'll mitigate some of the conflict. Doesn't mean it'll eliminate, so don't get me wrong. We're not talking about eliminating conflict, because that's not possible with human beings. Sure. But the thing about is, how do you allow people, how do you set up the structure to allow people to participate? And at the end of the day, get an answer, even if they don't happen to like that answer.
Very good. Very good. Very good. So the legacy of the family business has been set by the founder of the company, and it's been well communicated across generations to generations, but there's change is always going to be a part of who we are, whether it be technology or economics or marketplace, so many different kinds of change. How does the direction of the business change, in your opinion, across generations? Do the family members move further away from the founder's purpose in the third and fourth generation, or does it stay the same through all the generations?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And it's another one of what I consider to be the key elements of legacy. And I call it personal phases. The phases that people are in, and that can be generational, or it can be driven by generational, it can be driven by health, or a whole bunch of different things. So for founders, you know, they make all the decisions from the point of view that the business that they founded, what it means to them, and how should it operate. Subsequent generations add their perspective based on their experiences, which influence their expectations. Like you mentioned, technology, market change, global market change, supply chain changes, et cetera, et cetera. An example is another business I know of that work with, and they're in the eyeglass frame business, started by the grandfather. And so the grandfather was the founder, and then the grandson and his cousin were the people running the business. They've been given more responsibility to go ahead and make decisions. Mm-hmm. And at some point in time, they made the decision to go visit a frame maker in France. And it was called Bollé. And I don't know if many people listening recognize that name, but most ski goggles at one point in time were done by Bollé out of France. And the grandfather was so upset. He stormed out. He says, we make glasses here in the United States. We should not have to go to foreign countries to do this. And you guys are idiots, and I'm leaving. And he left, and he didn't come back for a couple of months. And the grandson and his cousins decided to go. They looked at it in due diligence, and they decided to go ahead with it. And the company really took off with that partnership with the company from France. And the grandfather eventually came back and said, well, I guess you were right. But at that point in time, the direction of the business changed, and not everybody agrees. So it's a combination of direction changing and conflict ensuing. Fortunately, they got themselves back together again. But I think the point is that depending on what changes go on in the environment and the perspective of the future generations. Now, as I mentioned before, I've worked with a company there in G4, and that generation, and it's 100 it'd be a 100-year-old business next year or the year after next, sorry. And that generation has a very different perspective on investment risks, on return on investment that they're expecting, et cetera, than the founders. The founders were merely trying to create a product that would help the customer bases they were targeting as their purpose. And so the discussion about whether to grow the business or to sell the business or to sell it to the employees as an ESOP are discussions that are going on right now. And those are discussions that would never have been heard of in the past. So across generations, there's a lot of things that can change the direction of the business. Going back to the Alfred Nobel example, he completely changed the direction of the business, even within the generation he was in. So the key here, from my perspective, is not to say that the business itself has to stay the same all the time, but going back to the roots of the purpose and values, what should we be doing next? Should there be a pivot here? Should we change to something else to make sure that our purpose and our values are being employed the way we want them to, and that they stem from what the founder originally thought of, modified by people's experiences over time.
Very good. Yes, we could spend a whole hour talking about the pivots in our family business. When I worked with my father for 17 years, the pivots that were happening, a lot of it over technology and economics, and the conflict over we've always done it that way, and taking a look at new ways of doing business. So thanks for sharing that. Well, you know, you talked about family council earlier, and the founder. You know, you don't see much governance in the founder phase of a business, because it's pretty much my way or the highway. I founded the company, we're going to do it my way. But as you move on second, especially third and fourth on beyond, is governance really becomes much more important. How does governance differ in a family-owned business from, let's say, a public company or a ESOP or whatever?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the founder and it's my way or the highway. That, in effect, was the governance for that business at that time. And made decisions about what to do here, there, or differently with the business. And a lot of times when I'm talking to family businesses, governance is a bad word. They're like, I don't want to have somebody telling me what to do. I don't want to have somebody looking over my shoulder, confidential information, et cetera, et cetera. And I totally understand that. And then sometimes then I'll ask, well, if you're going to buy a $250,000 piece of equipment for your business, what process do you go through? And they say, well, we, you know, get the engineers involved, we get the operations people involved, all the good things you're supposed to do in that process. And my point is that that is governance. It's decision making at its easiest to understand. And so it's a need for making appropriate decision making and a process to go with it. So between family and non-family owned businesses, the need for the processes and the best in class steps within those processes are not different. The difference comes, in my opinion, in the education for the family of what oversight and approval means, and who has authority, and why it's important. In publicly traded companies, leaders come to the table with the experience of knowing the what, who, and why of governance. Family members, especially extended family members, may not. So, you know, additional aspect within family-owned business is the emotional feelings attached to who has authority, and why did they make that decision, or why do they get to make that decision, or why did they make that decision? And so I think, again, it's important as we think about governance, which is one of the key elements of family-owned business ability to get their legacy into the future. It's important that that is also an understanding of something that's explained, vetted, and commented on in generational engagement programs.
Very good. Very good. Well, you've talked about it a little bit, but maybe expand on it a little bit. We have a saying that family is family and business is business, but never the two shall meet unless, of course, you work together in a family business. Which comes first, the business or the family, when making decisions?
That is a $64 million question, isn't it? The way I look at it, the business exists to serve its constituents, most importantly, the family who owns it. So in order for the business to provide for the family, the right decisions need to be made in the business to sustain and grow that business. So in my opinion, that means the answer is the business comes first. That doesn't mean you don't pay attention to the needs of the family. As I mentioned earlier, understanding what people have as needs or where they're going or where they are in their life phase is important to be able to make decisions within the business, if possible, to accommodate that. But in the bottom line is the business comes first, because if the business fails, it can't exist to serve the family or the family's legacy.
Well, there may be some founders of family businesses listening here today, and they say, I get all this legacy thing, Charlie, and sort of like Nobel, he had a chance to sort of rewrite his legacy before he was gone. But how do you ensure a legacy gets passed down from generation to generation?
You know, that's a great question as well. And clearly there's no one answer on how. Mm-hmm. If it were simple, everyone would be able to do it. But unfortunately, as we all know, I think the statistics say only 40% of family-owned businesses reach G2, mm-hmm. 13% G3, and just 3% are passed down to fourth generation and beyond. So and this comes back to actually why I wrote the book and what's in the book, Power of Legacy. In my experience, there are six critical elements that influence a family's ability to build a successful, sustainable legacy. And the six are governance and risk management, succession planning, leadership development, family and business architecture, personal phases, and generational engagement. And I think we've touched on most of those. We didn't necessarily talk about succession planning in detail, leadership development, but clearly within a family, the generational engagement informs those. So it's important that those are connected as well. And many people understand or have heard any one of those six probably. But it's more important to understand the connection and interrelationship between them. That's something people are not talking about. So somebody says, well, I need succession planning, or I need to leadership development, or I need to and have a governance structure. And again, without understanding how they're connected, it's too easy for them to be disconnected and not solve the conflict issues or the direction issues or the legacy issues that are important to go forward. And that's why I wrote the book, The Power of Legacy. So it addresses each of those and attempts to describe how the connection exists, so that it's not one or the other in terms of a silo. It's all of them combined that have to be considered and how they're interconnected.
Very good. Very good. Well, you've mentioned your book, The Power of Legacy and Family Business. And in case some of our listeners would like to read your book and to learn more about legacy and your thoughts on that, where can people find out more about your book?
It's available on Amazon.com. And so if you go to Amazon.com, you can search for the title, The Power of Legacy, and it should come up. Another way to do that would be visit my website at expertsinhow.com and click on Thought Leadership Books, and it'll be one of the books in there.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we've had a wonderful time together, and there's powerful information that you provided us for our listeners about legacy. And really, at the end of the day, we truly can't take it with us. So, but we can leave it with those that follow us, and that is our legacy. But tell us a little bit about what's the future look like for Charlie, and maybe what are just some closing thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, the future for me is to continue following my passion to help family businesses. Again, as it unfolded and not necessarily planned in advance, I have 40 plus years of experience serving family businesses as a C-suite executive, non-family member, and board service, and as an advisor in my practice, Experts in How. So I want to continue to do that, because what gets me up in the morning is helping people. Mm-hmm. As far as thoughts to share, to remember, from what I would say is, when we've talked about it here, in families, as in business, it's about relationships. And I find that building relationships between family members, in addition to the relationships you would build with members of the business, is critical to identify and mitigate the barriers we talked about in achieving a sustainable legacy. And I would also add that generational engagement programs and processes are the secret sauce, if you will, that successfully connects the six elements of legacy that I mentioned earlier. So I think it's important to begin to, you know, to communicate, pay attention, have the difficult conversations, figure out how to make those work, whether you can do it yourself or have someone facilitate it. I think it's really important to find out how you can break the pattern of less than 3% going on to generation four and beyond.
Right, right. That's a huge responsibility, but it's something as family business advisors like us, is always our goal. But at the end of the day, it's really up to the families, and a great way to ensure success of that transitioning next generations is planting a strong seed of legacy building for your family business. Well, right. Charlie, thank you for being my guest on Family Business Day. Please accept our best wishes for continued success for you, for your family advisory work, and also for your book, The Power of Legacy in Family Business.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. I think you're touching on very important issues that we need to keep discussing with among ourselves and with family businesses so that we can help them be more successful.
Thank you. Well, Charlie's book, The Power of Legacy and Family Business, can be found on Amazon or wherever you find your books. To learn more about the work Charlie does, visit www.expertsinhow.com. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for the Family Business Day podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Center for Family Business, located in Nashville, Tennessee. Our passion is to help families create a positive environment where the family thrives, the business performs, and working together, they create a lasting family legacy. Whether you're a business owner looking to grow your family business, or you're wanting to prepare to someday sell or transition the business to the next generation, check out our free resources on our website at www.tncfb.com. If you want to talk to a family business advisor about your specific family business needs, schedule a 30-minute no-cost call by sending us an email to info@tncfb.com. If you want to talk, we will listen. So until next time, thanks for joining us.